Accession number 28361, Reel 12.
General Julian Thompson, Reel 12. You were saying these hides were probably not used for very long at a time, that the chaps were just using them as a refuge for emergencies.
Yes.
So is your view then that they were just living in the village?
I'm pretty sure they just lived in the village, and they took to the hides when they thought that there was going to be a problem. And I think that's one of the reasons why we got this one chap who, because he thought we were just driving through,
He hadn't bothered, or was late,
not alert.
That's a bit careless.
Yeah.
On his part.
Indeed, yes.
So, what was the follow-up then after you found the other four fellows in the
well, having finished the search, we then went and did the similar operations in other villages. We didn't net anybody, and then these chaps were taken away and presumably. Charged and went through the normal process of the civil law.
Mm. Were your men given particular training in search techniques? Not really.
I mean, nothing like they do now for Northern Ireland, no.
Because I think earlier on in Palestine, the Royal Engineers had been tasked with developing searching techniques.
Yes.
On account of the fact they knew about building construction and training other troops to do the same thing.
Yes.
I just wondered if there'd been anything of
that sort. We didn't have Royal Engineer search teams.
No.
The sort of resident experts, if you can call them that, which they weren't really, in the commando, was the assault engineer platoon, who had done some sort of pioneer training.
And these policemen you mentioned, I mean, were they Turkish or
Turks.
Were they
Turks? They were Turks,
What was the response of the villagers when you lifted these?
A certain amount of wailing and chest beating and a rather sullen demeanour.
No, any sort of active opposition? Or
no, and there was no sort of stone throwing or rioting or anything like that, no.
Could you think, have stopped these fellows being active by prolonged occupation of such villages so they couldn't come out of there?
Well, I suppose one could, but it would be the trouble there is you'd buy up a huge number of troops because you'd have people in each village, and then you'd have to have reliefs and probably reliefs for the reliefs. So the whole of the Cyprus garrison would be sitting in villages, not actually achieving very much.
No, well, except for keeping them in there.
You hope.
You hope, yes, you kept them in their hives, they wouldn't really be doing very much, would they?
Probably not, but then there'd be the question of where you accommodated them.
Yes.
Troops, you'd have to build somewhere to accommodate them, unless you booted people out of their houses and took over the houses. So, as far as I know, it may have been considered, but it certainly wasn't put into operation.
On this question of accommodation, you were in wooden huts, the pilgrims' accommodation.
Yes.
What was that like? Was it comfortable? Or?
Yes, it was. It was... perfectly okay, really. It was a combination of wood and stone. It was the bottom story. It was stone, rather like a sort of cow byre, and above it was built a wooden structure with plastered walls. And we had they were rooms actually, sort of like small bedrooms. So you had two or three chaps sleeping in each in each room. Except down below where they were in the bigger accommodation, which once, I think, had animals in it, probably.
And how did you go on for feeding?
Oh, feeding at Kiko, we were feeding mainly on compo, 10-man compo, or fresh rations, and we had a cook who was detached from commando headquarters who did the cooking.
That sounds as though...
And they were cooking on hydro burners. Do you remember the old hydro burner? Which was a petrol burner which projected a flame under metal racks and you put the Dixies on the metal racks. And the Dixies were exactly the same as the ones you see in films like Zulu and things like that, the cooking. A sort of oval metal thing with a lid and a handle.
And normal practice, I think, would be to put these things in a sort of trench.
Yes, you, normally you dug a trench. If you were there for any length of time, you dug a trench and put your hydro into that.
Otherwise it could be dangerous.
But the roar of a hydro is something that sort of lived with me. One would be in the morning, if you were not going out at all, you'd be lying in your sleeping bag and hear the cooks flashing up the hydros, and you know that breakfast wasn't too far off.
So, I mean, these things are important, aren't they, if you're engaged in this sort of prolonged detached duty, get the domestic administration.
It is important, and to have a cook, and to have a good chef who could produce good food out of the then in pretty inadequate rations. I mean, it wasn't inadequate in terms of bulk, but the rations weren't all that good, and you got pretty fed up with 10-man compo after a while.
But you were getting some supplementary
rations. We got supplementary rations, like bread, fresh meat, and sometimes fresh vegetables.
So you described two major operations, Kingfisher, which was the cordon search, then these village searches, which were fruitful. Were there any others?
There were others at troop level, only lasted a couple of days.
What sort of things were they doing?
Well, again, it was the cordon and search.
In your area or...?
Both in my area and adjacent to it, yeah.
Did you find anything in your own area?
No.
Do you think this was because they were clean or were you just unlucky on the day?
I think that they had either pushed off or we were unlucky on the day.
Did you manage to develop any sort of better relations with the village inhabitants whilst you were there through casual contact and so on?
No.
They remained sullen.
They remained sullen and indifferent. Indifferent, absolutely. And Trudas, I mean, I think one of the reasons is that Trudas had been very much a hard area and had been an area of high ioka activity, and the villagers really had, quite frankly, had enough of cordon searches and having their houses turned over every few weeks.
So fed up.
They're fed up with it.
Sometimes that means they get fed up with the guerrillas rather than with the occupation forces.
Well, that didn't seem to happen. I think the guerrillas kept their noses fairly firmly to the sticking point.
What happened then when this period came to an end?
Well, we were then relieved in Cyprus, and one of the reasons we were relieved was because, although we didn't know it till later, that what I alluded to earlier, the Lebanon crisis, there was trouble brewing in the Middle East, or the Near East, and so it looked as if we might have to carry out some amphibious operations or operations in support of people like the King of Libya. And so the whole brigade was concentrated back in Malta, except for 45 Commander, who relieved us in Cyprus. So 42 Commander, who'd been in cadre form in the UK, was shipped out to the to Malta, and we were taken back to Malta. And we then went through a period of intensive amphibious training, remembering that we hadn't actually done any amphibious training for quite a long time. And we were doing amphibious training with LSTs and LCTs, landing craft tank.
Was this beach assaults?
This was beach assaults, yeah.
With the assumption of them being opposed?
Sure. And we did these in Malta, in one of the few beaches in Malta. And I remember one of the cases we had Monty came to watch us.
Now there's distinction.
And Monty was then, of course, retired, long retired. I mean, he was a field marshal and never retired. I don't know what he was doing out there. This is 1958. The only thing I remember about him was he asked, why aren't the troops wearing shorts? We were in trousers. It was sort of August or time, quite hot, August or September. And we were doing a huge amount of amphibious training. We'd do sort of a beach landing two or three times a week, I suppose, for a number of weeks.
On what scale? Were they commando level or brigade
level?
Brigade, so yeah. Brigade assault.
Brigade assaults,
Any sign of naval support for those?
Oh yes. I mean, they had taken out of mothballs a number of LCTs, then the LSTs were being used as well, and of course what were known as LCAs, landing craft assault, which was the old Second World War landing craft assault. We were using those.
Those are the platoon level.
Yes. They took 30 men. They were aimed to carry a platoon. And, of course, I had my machine guns, which were now back in the machine gun role, mm-hmm. so I had to quickly train my machine guns, who hadn't fired a Vickers machine gun for 6 months, mm-hmm. To remind them how to do that. Mm-hmm. So we were very busy, actually, mm-hmm. Doing that, and then my vehicles were normally embarked in an LCT and landed, waded ashore from the LCT.
Your champs?
My champs.
Mm-hmm. Were they all right doing
yeah,
that wading?
Yeah, they were okay. They were mm-hmm. all right. And then... we did those exercises, and then we did some landings, which I think were really designed as demonstrations
yeah.
on the beaches of North Africa, around Benghazi.
Oh, yes.
Now, this time, at the same time, the parachute brigade flew out to Amman, was in Jordan, mm-hmm. so the commander brigade was looking after the North African end, mm-hmm. and the parachute brigade was flown out to support King Hussein in Jordan. Mm-hmm. Because there'd been this coup in Iraq when Faisal was killed, you probably remember. And the Americans were tasked with looking after Lebanon and landed there. So that was a sort of division of tasks in rough terms.
Did you know all this at the time? Was this what you've learned about it since? Were you briefed on the
situation? We were briefed on some of it, but I have to be very careful to decide in my mind what I've learnt since and what I knew at the time. We knew at the time, I think, was there was some kind of crisis. Mm-hmm. We were not told why we were doing landings in North Africa mm-hmm. at all.
When I'm mentioning naval support, I'm thinking in terms of...
The gun support, yes. There were ships. Oh, yes.
And they were simulating...
They were simulating naval gunfire. Indeed, yes. Mm-hmm. And we had people specially trained to talk mm-hmm. to them and spot mm-hmm. for them.
Did you have any naval forward officers bombardment
yes, we
accompanying
did.
You ashore?
Yes, we did. Mm-hmm. We did. There was a battery mm-hmm. in Malta. Mm-hmm. Whether it had been sent out there or was it permanent mm-hmm. station, I can't remember. Mm-hmm. But there was a battery in Malta that provided these people.
Mm-hmm. And... aircraft carriers? There were aircraft carriers,
and I can't remember. Well, I'm pretty sure we had air support, because we did have air support, yes. Mm. And we never saw the carriers, because they're always miles away. But
of course.
But they provided air support, yes.
Would this be Fleet Air Arm?
Yeah, Fleet Air Arm, yeah.
Mm. What about the Royal Air Force? Any sign of them?
I'm sure they were around. Mm. Canberras, they would have been. Mm. And probably, I don't know what the fighters were.
The Hawker Hunter was
Hunters, yeah. Yeah.
Fighter bomber.
Yeah. Role. But again, I don't remember seeing them, but I'm sure they were around, and I'm sure they were part of the plan.
Do you remember doing anything on the direction of close air support as part of the workup for this?
We had a chap whose job it was to do just that. I remember he was came... He landed with me, with my machine gunners, and he was Army FAC. Mm. I remember he was a Royal Fusilier, he was a great big chap. He was rather a nice chap, but he had a team of chaps with radios to talk to fighters.
So it sounds as though this was very thorough, and it was all singing, all dancing with every
yes.
all services involved.
It was the whole nine. Well, the only thing we didn't have was any armour.
Ah.
And I think the reason for that was that had there been, and I'm now speculating, had there been a situation demanding our intervention in Libya, of course there was a resident armoured regiment in Libya anyway.
Quite.
So presumably the plan involved some kind of marrying up
yes.
of us with the armour.
Yes.
And in fact, the place where we did one of our practice landings was at Homs, where the armoured regiment was actually based.
Did you have any liaison parties?
I don't remember.
No,
that's having a liaison. No.
And were you intended, if this had come off, would your role have been that of forward recce, or would you have been acting as machine gun support?
We were practiced as forward recce. I mean, when we did the exercise, when we landed, we didn't just stop. We obviously went in and carried out an exercise, and I was used in a recce role
yes.
for that.
How long did that exercise take?
Oh, not long, two or three days.
So it was drive inland to
a It was drive in, do a bit of mucking around, a bit of playing soldiers, and then off again.
Did you.
Because we landed, we did several landings. I've just got to let this.
You say you went inland for two or three days and
yes.
then you came back. Was this exercise located near inhabited areas, like major cities or anything like that?
No. When we landed at... I can't remember the name of the place now. There was an old Roman ruin there, because I remember we landed near it, and there wasn't much habitation as far as I remember. We just went off into the desert and did an exercise and then came back again. But we'd done a landing, we did two or three on the North African coast. We did one near Benghazi, which is quite some way from the other landing place. And I suspect it was A, to work us up, and B, to sort of demonstrate that the Brits were around. And I think they took the opportunity of having all the amphibious ships there to put us through our paces a number of times.
Did you see anything of the Libyan army at all?
Not a thing. No, we didn't see the Libyan army at all.
Were you briefed about there being any possibility of active opposition?
No. No, we didn't expect active opposition when we did the exercises.
Do you know, were you carrying live ammunition?
There was live ammunition in the ships, but it wasn't issued to us. It was around. And I remember that was... I had a one-tonner, which was my platoon sergeant's truck, and was the ammunition truck. And that had live ammunition in it, but it didn't land for the exercise.
It sounds like this was a gesture rather than a...
I think so, but it was also working us up in case we actually had to do it. And I think that... I'm sure someone who knows far more about it than I would say, yes, I think there was a risk to King Idris, which of course eventually was materialised a few years later when the present ruler booted him out.
Yes, Colonel Gaddafi.
Colonel Gaddafi.
How long did this period of tension last, as far as you recollect?
It lasted about a couple of months, because we then... Four-two commander then went home. In fact, we went almost seamlessly from our landing exercises into a period of desert training, a la the training we'd done the year before, i.e., you know, basic training through to collective training.
At Tahuna.
We relieved 4-2 commander was in Tahuna. We relieved them. They went home, and then we went swung straight. That was the last we saw of the amphibious ships. We swung straight into what we'd been doing the year before. Back into the sort of cycle of training again.
During this time, were you having a sort of turnover in your...
Oh, yes, we had a turnover in two directions. One, of course, the National Servicemen came and went.
Yeah.
So when they finished their 2 years, they went and were replaced. And then when, in those days, because the brigade was out there permanently, we changed people round rather than units round. So normally, after about 2 years, people would go... and do something else.
You'd send them off to another commander.
Send them back home to the depot or something like that,
Did any of your National Servicemen decide that they wanted to stay in?
I don't remember any of the Marines, but some of the officers did. Some of them decided they'd like to make this their career. Not many, but one or two,
Was that simple, or was it difficult to convert from National Service Commission to regular?
It depended entirely on demand, in the sense that if there were holes to fill, then they were welcome. If there weren't, they were told, sorry, that's it.
And were there holes to fill normally?
Not as many as there would be now, because people tended to stay on longer. There wasn't such a culture of sort of staying for 5 years and then going as there is now. So people tended to stay on. So there weren't all that many holes to fill, no.
Did your training, any changes in the training at Tahuna, significant?
No, more or less the same as we'd done before. It was sort of going around
cycle.
Going around the boy again, really, doing the same stuff.
Okay, so what happened after that? Did you go back to Malta?
Then we were back to Christmas again. So we've done a year, you see.
The usual routine.
Back to Christmas, and then another Cyprus tour came up in the spring. Now, this was quite interesting, because I had a change of job in that my troop commander... was taken to do something else. I can't remember what he was taken to do. And so I became the troop commander. So I find myself commanding three platoons, which is not a bad... I mean, it was equivalent to a company commander. I was then still only... How old was I? 24.
You commanded two platoons a year before.
So this is... I had three, so I had a company now, effectively. And I was based in Trodos. That's the actual village of Trodos. And I had a platoon with me, and two of my platoons in two other villages outside Troodos.
What was your tactical area of responsibility in this case? What,
I'm just trying to remember what size it was. Mm. It was, I'd say it was probably sort of 10 by 10, 10 kilometres, by, or yeah. 10 miles by 10 miles, yeah. or 10 map squares.
Sort of 100 thing. Square miles.
About 100 square miles, yeah, yeah.
And the terrain and so on?
Terrain was very similar to the Kiko terrain. Only, in fact, it was as higher, it was the highest mountain in... And we were nearly at the top of it, so we had snow.
Mm. I was going to ask if you were above the snow line.
No, we were above the snow line, mm. we had snow. Mm. We relieved a company of, I think it was two para.
Mm.
I think it was two para, it could have been one para, I can't remember now.
Yeah.
I relieved it and I took over from them.
Do you remember what they told you when you did the handover?
They said that the one of the villages was called Amiandos, which was a mining village, mm. and they mined copper, something, and they were all a bullshit lot, mm. liable to give trouble. But on the whole, it was quite a quiet time.
Mm. Was this village large? What sort of population were you handling there?
Amiandos, I suppose it was several hundred, but not a big village. I mean, not thousands.
Mm.
Several hundred people.
Well, were they organised? I understand there's an organisation called ACOR, which is a sort of communist.
Yes,
party.
There was a communist party, which of course was in conflict with IOCA, because IOCA was very right wing.
Mm.
So the two used to pop each other off from time to time.
How convenient!
Which was very convenient. Mm. And certainly. I think the only sort of deaths we had in my patch in that tour was this business of mutual popping people off.
Were they prepared to give information against each other as well?
Not that I knew of. Special branch might well have.
Hmm.
There was a huge sort of secrecy surrounding special branch at the sort of level at which I was operating. Now, whether the intelligence officer hmm. was getting... info from Special Rock, mm. I don't know, I suspect mm. it was, but mm. as far as I was concerned, they were sort of stony-faced people who told us nothing.
Ah.
Because we weren't sort of entitled to know.
It was like a policeman to domestic.
Yes, yeah, I mean, we didn't have any contact with Special Branch
mm.
other than them being around on some of the operations.
In general, was this area more populated, more heavily populated than your previous
Yes,
area?
The villages were bigger.
Bigger villages. And you mentioned the mining village, Amiandos. Apart from that, what were the bases of the local economy? Were they?
I think exactly. It was, you know,
herding and agriculture.
Herding and olives and carob trees and mm. so on, yeah.
What about enemy in the area? Did you get...
There was... I'm just trying to remember now what... Again, not many. More than there were in the Kiko area, but again... couple of dozen or something like that was the amount. Not many.
And were they all known? I mean, were these known?
They were all known personalities. Yes. Yeah.
There's 24
yeah.
known
personalities.
And mm. What was their level of activity? Were
pretty low.
Much?
Pretty low. Yeah. And one of the reasons it was low is that this is now 1959.
Yeah.
And of course, in 59 the thing was, mm. you know, the peace was signed,
mm.
and Makarios, of course, was released and brought
mm.
back.
Mm.
And so I think they could see that they, the partition, which was what they feared and what the Turks wanted, wasn't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were talking about, you know, sovereign base areas and all that sort of thing. So it was really quite a quiet tour on the whole.
Did you know about that? Did you know about the arrangements for power sharing?
Only what we heard on the radio.
Ah.
And what we were told, you know, at O Groups mm. by the CO. Because
mm.
by that time I was attending Commando O Groups as a troop commander.
Mm. What were you supposed to be doing then? Were you doing the same
thing? We were doing the same sort of thing, really. Patrolling, and of course, mm. I wasn't patrolling myself only occasionally. I was sending mm. platoons, you know, the platoon commanders were in charge of that.
Mm.
And they, in my two villages outside Troodos, they operated from accommodation in the villages. Mm. They actually lived in the villages.
In village houses.
They lived in village houses. Yeah, they were billeted. They had taken over houses, which they'd turned into little... they weren't billeted around the village. They all lived in one place. And I can't remember. I think one was the school and one was the police station or something like that. It was a large enough to take sort of 30 chaps. And of course, they were self-supporting. They were administering themselves. So I used to have to pay them. In the days when we used to have to go out and pay people...
On the blanket.
On the blanket. And I used to have to take the pay. I used to go around in a ferret.
With a bag of money.
With a bag of money. Mm. A ferret scout car, you know, with a Browning.
Mm. Risk of ambush.
Risk of ambush. Mm. Risk of ambush. But we didn't get ambushed.
Mm. And did you have control of patrolling policy?
Oh, yes. I had control of it because they would report to me.
Yeah.
And then I'd report to Gmarty Corps what we were up to.
And were you... did you have your area divided up into platoon sectors in which they were acting independently?
Indeed.
Yeah. So you didn't have a sort of troop...
No, occasionally I would obviously say we'll all go and operate in that area together as a troop, but each platoon had its own area, yes.
Mm. Did you have any contacts in that?
No.
So it was all
very quiet.
Patrolling, ambushes, nothing going on.
Mm.
What was your own headquarters accommodation like in troop?
Well, we were living in what had been the ski centre chalets. There'd been an army ski centre up there. And in fact, it got so quiet towards the end, they actually had the army ski championships up there. And so we were descended on by loads of people, all skiing. So we were living in sort of wooden chalets. It was very comfortable. Mm.
How did you conduct your business day to day? Did you have morning prayers or anything of that sort? Did you have ad hoc?
Well, I shared location with another troop. And they had a sort of egg of area out to one side, and I had an egg of area out to the other. Mm. And so we had a little officer's mess, which we lived in. And sorry, the accommodation. Did we share it?
No. I was asking how you did your business day to day.
Oh, right.
Whether you had morning prayers every day or anything.
I had morning prayers, and then I would sort of deal with any troop business that was required. Mm. Then I'd go out and visit most of the time. I'd be out visiting the platoons.
Did the platoon commanders come in for morning prayers, or did you...
No, I used to go out to see them, actually, because I didn't want to bring them in every time. I'd actually go and brief them personally.
So who was actually in your troop headquarters, then?
Well, I had myself, and I didn't have a 2IC. I had a sergeant major. I had a troop quartermaster sergeant, who was a colour sergeant. I had a clerk. I had radio operators. Mm. I had a storeman, troop storeman. Well, that was about it, really. Mm. About five of us, I suppose, five or six of us.
So, up in the morning, and who would actually attend your morning meeting?
I would have that with the sergeant major.
Sergeant major.
And the resident troop commander, the one who was actually based at Trudolph with me. And we'd then go through whatever the program for the day, what had happened the night before, anything else that needed to be discussed. Seeing naughty boys, if
were there
required.
Many of those?
Not many, no. Mm. Any of those that were in outlying areas, I'd go out and deal with out there, take the sergeant major with me.
Mm. What was his main function? What did sergeant major at troop level do?
Well, he was the company sergeant major. Mm. So he was sort of discipline and administration and the paperwork, and generally looking after the discipline as a company sergeant major does. Mm. Yeah.
Did you get round all the troops every day? All the platoons every day? One platoon per day, roughly?
No, because in fact, to get at them, it was, though they were quite close to each other, the villages were adjacent, there was a huge mountain ridge in the middle. Mm. So the roads, you went there to that one, and a huge way round to get to that one, though they were actually only a couple of miles apart.
As the crow flies.
As the crow flies, yeah. Mm. Yeah, so it was a... To pay the two troops was a day's job.
Mm. When you went out in your ferret, were you on your own or were you escorted?
Well, I had, to begin with, I had another vehicle. Mm. But when the situation got more and more sort of peaceful, a ferret was deemed to be sufficiently aggressive to look after itself, so I'd be on my own. I mean, I'd have a driver.
Yeah.
I'd have my pay clerk sitting below me, mm-hmm. and I'd be the Browning gunner sitting in the turret. So we'd actually have three men in what was meant to be a two-man vehicle. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you had this spell up in Trudos and.